The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, so we made it to a Friday. I made it to a Friday. Oh, my God. I'm here. I'm doing much better. Thank you for bearing with me yesterday. I know I usually start with comedy, but there's so many things we need to address today. So we're just going to jump in. First, regarding yesterday's show, you saw what a major depressive episode is. I had a meltdown yesterday. It started probably about an hour before the show. And by the time 3 o'clock Eastern rolled around, I couldn't hold back the tears. I tried. If you watched the beginning of the show yesterday, you'll notice I didn't appear on camera on YouTube before I hit the comedy bit to start the show because I had been crying. And by the time the comedy bit was over, I couldn't hold it back. And as you know, if you've listened to my show for any amount of time, I'm nothing if not honest. You get what I think, what I feel. I don't know how to broadcast in any other way than honestly, and I've been doing this for 40 years. I'm not kidding. Got into radio in 1979. This is all I've ever done. So it is, for my career. What you get is the real deal. And I got to thank you guys for very little criticism of what happened yesterday, but a lot of people expressing gratitude for my verbalizing what they were feeling, for me being honest, expressing what so many of us are going through right now. So again, I wouldn't do it by choice. I would never plan a show. I think I'll have a meltdown tomorrow. It happened because of everything that's going on in this country, because we have a madman in the White House. And I fear for our future. I have a child. She's 20 now. The thought of Donald Trump getting reelected scares the bejesus out of me, which is why we need to stop. We need to do something to fix things. And yes, my frustration in the Democratic Party leadership is visceral. I just some of you who I've heard from have faith for whatever reason in Nancy Pelosi. It's sort of like you had faith in Barack Obama. He's playing 11-level chess. No, Nancy Pelosi is only thinking of her political legacy. She, for whatever misguided reason, believes that if we go through an impeachment of Donald Trump, that somehow this will cost the Democrats in 2020 at the ballot box. Nancy, let me tell you something. If you don't do anything regarding the most criminal, corrupt, demented, crazy asshole in the White House in American history, that will hurt the Democrats at the ballot box in 2020. People came out in droves last November to give the House back to the Democrats because they expected you to do something about this, about the situation we find ourselves in. And instead you're going, well, impeachment, I don't know. No, I think we'll wait. No, the only way to get rid of Donald Trump is to vote him out. I agree with you. An impeachment will not rid us of Donald Trump. But an impeachment, because the Senate will not convict him. This Republican-led Senate will not convict him and will not remove him from office. I get that. That's not the end goal of the impeachment. The goal is getting all the facts out on the table so even those idiots who shut-ins who watch Fox so-called news all day will hear what this idiot has done, because they certainly don't hear it from Fox or One America News Network or Breitbart or Gateway Pundit or any of those myriad of right-wing media outlets that are supported by people with money on the right. We are just, you know, we're like spinning in the wind here doing progressive radio on the internet. We certainly don't exist on the airwaves anymore, at least not in any meaningful way. Again, inaction will cause the Democrats to lose in 2020. That's why I'm very, very grateful for Gerald Nadler. Because the word is that Gerald Nadler, and believe it or not, even Adam Schiff, are pushing back on Nancy Pelosi and her, you know, her ridiculous opposition to opening an impeachment inquiry. You open an inquiry, it just gets the hearings underway. It doesn't mean you're going to impeach him. There's no downside to opening an impeachment inquiry. Just saying. I'm going to play it. It's a little long, but Gerald Nadler had a press conference this morning. And depending on how you heard it, to my ears, it sure sounded like Gerald Nadler was saying, if Nancy Pelosi won't open an impeachment inquiry, that's okay. We'll do it here in the Judiciary Committee, which is exactly where an impeachment proceeding, inquiry, whatever you want to call it, begins. So this is Jerry Nadler from a couple of hours ago before the cameras.
I am joined today by many of my colleagues from the House Judiciary Committee. We want to say a few words about Director Mueller, what we learned from his testimony, and next steps in our work to hold President Trump accountable for his conduct. Robert Mueller is a man of honor and integrity. He has led a life defined by service to his country. Some have argued that because Director Mueller was reluctant to testify and seemed older than some remembered him, his work is somehow diminished. It is not. Before he ever stepped into our hearing room, the director had rendered our country a great and necessary public service. He showed through his report and his indictments that the United States was attacked and remains under siege by a foreign adversary. He showed that the Trump campaign both welcomed and benefited from this attack on our country. And he showed that the president repeatedly lied to cover it up. And if that were not enough, Director Mueller's testimony removed all doubt. He told us that Donald Trump obstructed justice and abused his office by tampering with witnesses, attempting to block the investigation, and attempting to fire the special counsel. He told us that Donald Trump lied to the public about the Trump Tower meeting in New York, lied to the public about his plans for Trump Tower in Moscow, and lied in his written responses to the special counsel. He told us in a remarkable exchange with Mr. Liu that but for the Department of Justice policy from prohibiting from doing so, he would have indicted President Trump. Indeed, it is clear that any other citizen of this country who behaved as the president has would have been charged with multiple crimes. Notably, my Republican colleagues were unable to refute a single one of these facts. So where do we go from here? We will continue to seek testimony from key fact witnesses. As many of you know, the committee has authorized several additional subpoenas.
Yes, they have.
Our work will continue into the August recess, and we will use those subpoenas if we must. We will also continue to seek important documents from the Department of Justice and the White House.
We have made some progress on this front. There appears to be compelling evidence of the president's misconduct outside of the four corners of the redacted version of the Mueller report, and we will work to uncover that evidence as well. Finally, today, we are filing an application for the grand jury material underlying the Mueller report. That information is critically important for our ability to examine witnesses, including former White House counsel Don McGahn, and to investigate the president's misconduct. I will not comment on reports of our ongoing negotiations with Mr. McGahn, but unless he complies with our accommodation efforts in very short order,
yes,
we expect to file an additional suit to enforce our subpoena,
yes,
for his testimony.
Yes.
And that will be next week, or
okay,
earlier next week.
Next week. So the recess doesn't impact them.
I should note that the committee could not
have
brought these lawsuits without the help and support of Speaker Pelosi.
Oh, give me a break.
Who is as dedicated
kissing
to
up to Nancy
accountable
because he
for
has to. They are pretending to support her, but they're pushing her.
Take your questions. Let me share just a few sentences from the petition we are filing with the court today.
Please.
Quote, because Department of Justice policies will not allow prosecution of a sitting president, the United States House of Representatives is the only institution of the federal government that can now hold President Trump accountable for these actions. To do so, the House must have access to all the relevant facts and consider whether to exercise its full Article I powers, including a constitutional duty power of the utmost gravity, recommendation of articles of impeachment.
Yes!
That duty falls in the first instance to the House Committee on the Judiciary. Close quote. As I said, that was from the court filing today. We take that responsibility seriously. No one can be above the law, not even President Trump.
Not even, I won't say those two words together, not even the orange asshole in the Oval Office. Yep. So, you know, the word is, let me share with you a couple of, I think I flagged these. Okay, so Greg Sargent, who writes the Plumline blog at the Washington Post, is reporting that basically, he broke the story this morning that the House Judiciary Committee would be opening an impeachment inquiry. That from Armando at Daily Kos. So that's what Nadler said. Now, Greg Sargent posted the language that the Judiciary Committee is using in court this morning, when they're trying to get the testimony of Don McGahn and everything that Nadler just explained that they were working on. Here's what it says. Number two, this is from the language in court. The Judiciary Committee is investigating whether to recommend articles of impeachment. These are official court documents, everybody. The House is constitutionally empowered to determine the rules of its own proceedings, including any rules governing impeachment proceedings or any prerequisites for commencing such proceedings. U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 5, Clause 2. In assessing the committee's intended use of grand jury materials, this court should afford great weight to the matter in which the House chooses to exercise its, quote, sole power of impeachment. Then it cites Nixon v. United States, the question whether the Senate's rules for trying impeachment comport with the Constitution's impeachment trial clause, blah, 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 blah. The court must give great weight to the Senate's own determination of when it is and when it is not in session for the purposes of recess appointment clause. I don't know. Where, as here, the committee is conducting an investigation whose purposes include determining whether to recommend articles of impeachment that is more than sufficient for purposes of Rule 6E's judicial proceeding exception. So Gerald Nadler is laying the groundwork for an impeachment inquiry. And for that, we owe Gerald Nadler a debt of gratitude. We really do. Now, on to today's show. I got to tell you, after yesterday, after everything that's going on, I thought we need a little break from politics. So, you know, my other life, my other radio life, it is in music. I spent the bulk of my career doing music radio, mostly in Los Angeles. And so, you know, I still have a foot in that world. In fact, I have a page at NicoleSandler.com. If you look on the menu under the Nicole Sandler Show or something like that, it says the music interviews. And so I've been posting every week, every other week, somewhere in there, many of the music interviews, most of them with performances that I did with some legendary artists from you know, Ray Davies of the Kinks to Jackson Browne to Chris Isaak to Sting to, did I say Jackson Browne? To, I mean, it goes on and on. So you're welcome to go listen. Well, I got to, yesterday, I was telling you about a little Twitter spat I was having with Ben Montench, who, for those who don't know, was Tom Petty's keyboard player for the entirety of the run of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Great keyboard player. Just was a bit of an asshole on Twitter because he chastised me for daring to retweet a photo that appeared to be Ivanka Trump wearing a sweater with a swastika on it. I retweeted it and said, why is Ivanka wearing a swastika? And so the minute I saw that it was a phony, I deleted it, but not before Ben Montench took me to task on Twitter. Really, I've never met Ben Montench. I did interview Tom Petty once, and I'll share that interview this weekend. So anyway, today in the interview segment of the show, in about 15 minutes or so, we will we'll be speaking with a guy named John Scott. Now, if you're at all interested in music and the music business and how an artist breaks, I encourage you to stay tuned. John Scott wrote a book. Oh, damn it. I left the book in the living room. A book called Tom Petty and Me. Back in the 70s, John Scott was a record promo guy. He pitched records to radio stations. And he is the guy responsible for Tom Petty breaking through. So we'll share that with you. We're going to turn away from politics in the second half of the show. It's Friday. We need a diversion. Music is a good one. But I got to tell you about my latest Twitter feud. This time it's Kathy Griffin. Seriously, Kathy Griffin, yeah, that Kathy Griffin, has been, like others, smearing Bernie Sanders, right? So I tweeted to her. I mean, she said some really horrible things. So I tweeted to her. Oh, thank you. I got the book. David brought me the book. It's nice having somebody here to help. Okay, so Kathy Griffin. So in response to one of her many tweets about Bernie Sanders, she wrote, "Did you see how Bernie Sanders ended his interview with a legendary Andrea Mitchell? What a sexist dick," she wrote. "Find it online if you can, or another GIF." So I responded to her tweet and I said, "Fuck you, Kathy Griffin. I'm sorry I ever paid to see you perform." So she responded to me. Didn't expect that. And she said, "Okay, Nicole, well, I don't feel the same way about you. I think it's great that you have a progressive, female-driven, progressive show. I'm frustrated that AM radio doesn't have progressive alternatives to the junk that Rush Limbaugh, etc. peddles. Do you think that will ever happen?" So I responded to her and said, "Nope, because the people with money on the left don't support progressive media. Why don't you step up and do it? By the way, you came on my show when Air America was on the air to promote your book. Why so nasty regarding Bernie?" And then I wrote, "Why don't you come back on my show to explain why you're so hostile to Sanders?" So, of course, that got Kathy Griffin her attention. And so she replied to me again. I know this is like a soap opera, right? Hold on. I got to find it. "Ha ha. Now you're just trying to book me. Nicole, please get this. As a feminist, I want you to do well and succeed. I want you to reap the benefits of everything you've worked very hard for, beyond our disagreement. I have no interest in a beef with you. United we stand, divided we fall." So I wrote back, "Way to deflect. I honestly want to understand your fucking problem with Bernie Sanders. There are ways to disagree with someone without being an asshole about it." Something I remind myself of all the time. "Anyway, you don't seem to understand that. Calling people terrorists? WTF. So I was referring to a tweet from someone else because she's been responding to people going, what the fuck, about her criticisms of Bernie Sanders. So she responds again. I'm sorry. I know this is petty, but welcome to my world. So Kathy Griffin responds to me and says, I have no idea what you were referring to. Who did I call a terrorist? Do you have proof or a tape? As someone who was investigated by the administration, you decided to sit out the election. I decided to sit out the election? Who the fuck is she talking to? Hold on. I decide, sorry, this is, I didn't see that part, to sit out the election? Way to make shit up, Ms. Trump. I voted, held my nose, and voted for Hillary Clinton. Way to smear me too. Okay, so anyway, I pointed out, I gave her the tweet of the woman, Tanya Singh, who said that Kathy Griffin called her a terrorist. Oh, she was referring to someone else. Oh, well. Anyway, so I don't expect Kathy Griffin to come back on the show anytime soon, just in case you were wondering. Okay, so there's my latest Twitter feud. And yes, to Rainbow Joe. Also, Andrea Mitchell is dishonest and salty about Bernie in general because Bernie let her husband, Alan Greenspan, really have it. Also, I'm sure they're busy resisting paying more taxes. Well, there is that. So, all right, so there's all that. So this is, you know, what I've been dealing with today. By the way, I do have a program announcement to make. Now, yesterday, I was asking the people in the chat rooms if I should move the time of my show, because there are some adjustments, time adjustments being made on the network that carries me. So I am carried, my show is on the Progressive Voices Network. When it first started, when I first came back after, when I first launched on the Progressive Voices Network, I was on at 3 p.m. Eastern, the time I do the live show, right? Then they moved me to after Randy Rhodes at 6. And then for, I guess, money reasons or whatever, they moved me to late at night to 10. Yes, Andrew Mitchell is married to Alan Greenspan. Sorry, just answering a question in the chat room. Then they moved me to 10 p.m. Eastern, where I show, where the show will air tonight. But tonight will be the last night that I'm on at 10 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network, because beginning Monday or Tuesday, they're moving me back to 5 p.m. Randy Rhodes, I guess, is going to be on Free Speech TV. And so her show will now run from 3 to 5 Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network. And then they're going to move me to 5 p.m. Eastern. Sorry, that calls for a bit of a celebration. Hold on. I do have the applause here somewhere. So here's the deal. I'm not going to change the time of the live show. So you got to choose. If you like the live show, I'm still going to do it live at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. The show will then air on the Progressive Voices Network at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Pacific. Everything else remains the same. The only choice you have to make is, do you want to watch Randy Rhodes live at 3, or do you want my show live at 3? It's up to you. Podcast will always be here. If you subscribe to the podcast, it's free. It's not behind a paywall because I know a lot of people are still hurting. I'm in that position. I can't afford to pay for podcasts, so I don't want to charge you. If you can afford it, please make a donation. We just got a monthly donor in Nick. Thank you, Nick, who after yesterday's show called me the female Mike Malloy. I'll take that as a compliment. So it's, the choice is yours. But, you know, if you can't, I don't do like Randy and many of the other shows and charge for the podcast. I offer it for free the way NPR operates. Basically, you know, you're free to listen, but if you're a fan, if you're a regular listener, hopefully you'll donate something to the cause, because you guys pay my salary. I don't have a Free Speech TV or a terrestrial radio station or anybody else paying me money. I live off of what you guys donate. So we're on the honor system here. So thank you for your support. And if you can't afford it, don't worry about it. I get it. I'm in the same boat.
We're in this together. Okay? All right. There's one other thing I wanted to share. You know what? Fuck it. We're done. 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Pacific. This show will be heard on the Progressive Voices Network. They have an app. It's free. Got lots of great shows. It's a full-on 24/7 progressive talk radio station. At Prog Voice or progressivevoices.com is where you can find them. Again, I will still be here. Nothing changes. The only thing that may change, and I'm waiting to hear back from Progressive Voices, is if they need me to produce a Monday show. Because since I came back from my cancer battle, I haven't done a show on Mondays. On Progressive Voices, they have another show they run in the Monday, in my time slot on Mondays. So I'm just waiting to hear back from them as to whether or not they're going to move that Moms Rising show to Mondays at 5 Eastern, or if they want me to do a show, in which case I'll come up with something for the next couple of weeks, and then I guess I'll start doing a Monday show again. We'll see. We'll play it by ear. Okay. So changing topics here. We're done with politics for the week. All right. I know many people tune in for the politics, but after this week, I think we need a break. And I say this all the time. It's why I usually start the show with a comedy bit, because if we don't laugh, if we don't take pleasure in other aspects of life, what you get is what happened to me yesterday. And I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Sadly, because I've suffered from depression throughout most of my adult life, it's the demon that I regularly battle. Now you've seen what a major depressive episode looks like, and it is not fun. So I need to take my own advice more. Get out and do things. On Sundays, I volunteer at the Broward County Animal Shelter. I walk dogs. I play with them. I love them. I try to find them homes. And whenever possible now, I listen to music. I have a CD collection, thousands strong, and I want to get rid of it all. I'm trying to purge physical things. So I've been ripping all these CDs, and I got a big 120 gigabyte iPod Classic off of eBay. And I basically now have my entire record library on this iPod, and I'm listening to music again, and it is mind-altering. It's the best thing I've done for myself in years, seriously. So what I thought we'd do is have a little bit of a musical diversion today. And again, I invite you to go to... No, I'm allergic to cats. Sorry. I invite you to go to NicoleSandler.com. Click on the menu under Nicole Sandler Show. You'll see all the way to the right the music interviews. There's a lot of stuff on there that you can... that you can peruse. There's a lot of content on the website, NicoleSandler.com. It's all free, so enjoy. And what I'm doing is trying to share some of these music interviews. Anyway, a guy, he's not really a friend of mine, but in my many years of doing music radio in Los Angeles, I was a music director, I was a promotion director, and part of the job is trying to figure out what songs to play on the radio. So I would talk to promotion people. Often they were employees of the record label who would call me to work me on a record, and sometimes they were independent promotion people. We'll get into the indie promotion people at another time, and we will, because it's a project that I think I'm embarking on. Not being an indie promoter, but another music event that I'm excited about that I'll tell you about. But an acquaintance of mine from my music radio days, a guy named John Scott, wrote a book called Tom Petty and Me. And for years, I had heard how John Scott was really single-handedly responsible for Tom Petty breaking, for him being an artist that you hear on the radio. Well, Tom Petty died a few years ago. His last show was at the Hollywood Bowl. And John Scott, the guy who wrote the book, Tom Petty and Me, was there in the audience. And before I bring John Scott on the line, I want to play for you a segment in which Tom Petty recognized John Scott from the stage at the Hollywood Bowl in what turned out to be his final concert ever. John Scott is coming up right after this clip. Here we go.
One friend in particular I want to dedicate this next song to is a guy named John Scott. You don't know him, but 6 weeks before our first record was dropped by ABC Records, he went to the radio stations with a vengeance and brought that sucker onto the charts. And we... And it wasn't easy. We're forever grateful. We're going to dedicate this to him tonight. This is I Won't Back Down.
So, there you have it. That's echo. Sorry about that. Tom Petty from, again, what was his last, his final concert appearance at the Hollywood Bowl a couple of years ago, where he recognizes John Scott for being responsible for breaking his career, really for his career. And so now I'm thrilled to welcome the author of the book, Tom Petty and Me, to the program, John Scott. Hey, John.
Hey, Nicole.
That must have been an incredible moment for you to witness. You had no idea that was going to happen, did you?
No. First of all, I would say I'm glad you're back in good health.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Anyway, all right, what did you say again? I'm sorry.
Oh, did you have any idea that Tom Petty was going to call you out from the stage of the Hollywood Bowl?
Oh, no, I had no idea at all. A lot of times I would go backstage, but that night I didn't want to go backstage because there was a lot of celebrities back there. And I just didn't want to get into that scene, so I'm just going to go be a fan and get in my seat and... You know, just walk around the Hollywood Bowls, you know, it's like so incredible.
It's a beautiful place. A horrible concert venue. I'm sorry, the sound's not great, but it's a wonderful atmosphere.
Experience, yeah. Yes. Yeah, you do it once at least. But anyway, no, I didn't know it, and that's what blew me away. And afterwards, I asked Mike Campbell, he said, John, he didn't even tell us he was going to do it.
Wow.
But it's on the set list. I think this is the first time he talked to the audience. After the fourth song.
Wow. Okay.
And to me, it was like a gift that Tom left me.
And it was. I mean, what a wonderful tribute for him to thank you in such a public way. And in retrospect, I mean, it turned out to be his final show ever. I saw you, John. We're Facebook friends too, and I saw you. Your reaction. It was, what, maybe a week later, it seemed, when the news broke that Tom had died. And it was just shock and disbelief. It's horrible whenever a friend passes away, whenever an artist, somebody that we, you know, grew up with, when we lose them. But someone who played such an important role in your life, and you his, I'm so sorry for your... You're actually the first person I thought of when I heard the news.
Oh, well, you and a lot of other people, too, I know, a bunch of people. It was crazy because it was only a week later after the concert.
That's what I thought. Wow. So now, John Scott, you had already decided you were going to write a book. You were going to write a book about your time as you call it, a promo man. I have a little thing to pick with you on the title promo man, but we'll get to that.
What's always promo man or promo gal or promo lady?
Back when you started, it was all promo men. There were only guys who did that job, right?
Yep.
And it really was a boys' club.
True.
The stories you tell with Charlie Minor and you brought back so many memories for me. And I only entered the L.A. radio music scene in 1987. So a lot of your story here predates that. But it was promo guys back then. And you were working for MCA Records. And you found a record by a guy who went by the name of Johnny Cougar back then. I played it on the radio when I was in college. You thought it was great, and the label didn't, and you fought with them over it?
Yeah, well, the record label, Johnny Cougar, was managed by Tony DeFreeze. And when I was in a meeting, I heard that name Tony DeFreeze, and I knew that from David Bowie because when I was a DJ, I was a big supporter of David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
And... I think the president of the record company put it up, as he said, anybody ever listen to this new record, Johnny Cougar, and I held my hand up. And I was the only one. And what song do you like? Chestnut Street Revisited. And he puts it on for maybe 30 seconds and sticks it and tosses it. He goes, who would play a record by Johnny Cougar?
Oy.
And I hate his manager. And then they said, the first time John was there, he said, F you to the head of international marketing. So, you know, he wasn't like, you know, and they didn't know who Tony DeFreeze was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I got sent to Seymour, Indiana to see John. And you could tell from the minute he started playing, he played the song I liked as he was sitting, standing acoustically, looking right at me in the front row.
Wow.
Knowing that I liked that song. But anyway, I went back to L.A. and tried to go, oh, this guy's a superstar. And of course, they thought it was nuts. And I did so many things to try to promote John. And we took a Cougar. We rented a Cougar. Bob Osborne and myself rented a Cougar at Pete Gideon. And we went to KMET, KLOS.
Of course you did. The big L.A. rock
Billboard
stations,
magazine,
right? Uh-huh. With a Cougar to promote Cash Johnny Park. Cougar. And there
and
I was.
Middle of Tower Records.
That's so funny. And there I was.
It was crazy, and they fired me.
Right. So MCA Records fired you. By the way, I was at WUSF in Tampa, college radio, playing I Need a Lover by Johnny Cougar, just so you know. So MCA Records fired you, and then you're like, what am I going to do now? And then you wound up at ABC Records?
Yes.
So how did this happen? How'd that come about?
I was out of work, and it'd been a month, and we just bought a new house in Los Angeles, and, you know, it's crazy money out there to spend the house on, and I didn't know what to do, and out of the clear blue, a friend of mine, who I used to be a promotion man in Atlanta, Charlie Miner, who's like the king of record promotion, I got to know him back then, but he called me and said, you want to go to work as head of album promotion? I went, hell yeah. And so 3 days later, I'm at, going up the Laurel Canyon Boulevard. And I see the black tower in the distance. So they give it my stiff finger.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I went to work there, and I had to do a Johnny Cougar pledge. Charlie Miner says, John, raise your right hand. You will never do a Johnny Cougar thing here again. If we don't like a band and you do, don't try to get in the middle of it.
Right. So you promised him you won't hold things up, that you won't go to bat for an artist that you're passionate about.
Right. And I'm going, okay, cool, because I got fired at the last one. And so, which was really funny. That was a great one because, about 3 days later, Charlie said, well, you don't have anything to do right now. Just call your buddies and radio friends and tell
so there,
them
there was
are,
no
blah, blah.
There was no rock record at the time that ABC Records was working, so he's telling you just call radio, schmooze them, let them know you're here because you don't have you don't have a project to get on right now. So you were doing that. You started going through the stuff in the office that you are now taking over, and you find a white label. Was it must have been a record, a vinyl back then? It was the early
the
70s,
vinyl,
right?
Yes.
So the white label, they used to press these white label records with nothing on the label to as early, you know, demos and stuff. And so you found this, you listened to it and said, oh my God, this is great. You took it into Charlie Miner's office, right? What happened? He knew who it was immediately.
Well, I didn't even know the band's name. I said, Charlie, who are these guys? And Charlie's the top 40 guy. He says, oh, that's Tom Petty and what is it? It's a punk band, Tom Petty and the Heartbreaker.
A punk
and
band, right.
When he said that, I just stopped dead in my tracks because I went, punk band? What are you talking about? This is a rock and roll band. He said, John, it's been out for 8 months. Sold about 12,000 copies, and we're dropping them from the label. And I had just heard Breakdown and American Girl. Okay?
Yes.
So you hear those two songs, and you know that's a punk band. That's a rock and roll band.
Exactly. And so you went back on your pledge, huh?
Well, I begged him. I got on my knees and begged him to let me just try and get a few radio stations to play it.
To play the song Breakdown, which you decided should be the first single, right? So you started working, and he cut a deal with you and gave you, what, how long did he give you to get this record charted?
Oh, six weeks.
6 weeks.
I had 6 weeks before I had any project to come out, so I had 6 weeks to get this record played.
Oh, my God.
And it was like, okay, whatever, just let me do it. And he did. He said, go ahead. You can't spend any money, which is fine.
Right.
I was just started calling my radio buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them didn't know who he was because of the album cover. The album cover really threw off a lot of people the first time Petty album.
Right, because he was wearing like a bullet thing around his neck. It was...
Yeah, he's got a black leather jacket, stringy hair, bullets around his neck, and people thought it was a punk record. Without even listening
image
to it,
is
probably.
Everything, right? Image is everything. Right, so... But you started calling radio people, and who was the first taker? Who was the first program director or music director who heard it?
Well, there's a few. There are a lot in the San Francisco, San Jose area.
Mm-hmm.
And in Boston, he had a following. But beyond that, not too many places. What happened, Charlie Kendall, who you may know.
I do.
Moved to Los Angeles to start a radio station right about that time that I had heard that record. And he was going to be the music director of K West,
right. That was right. That was before I got to L.A. It was gone by the time I got there. I think it became KLSX.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? It was 97.1. Became KLSX where I worked when I first got out to L.A. But
wow.
So K West was the new rock station in L.A.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go. Go. Sorry, I'm just trying to move it along.
That's okay. Stop me when you want to. He happened to go to work for that station maybe a day, maybe he's been there a week, I don't know. And I said, Charlie, can I bring you this record over? I had the real cover now. Because all I could do was play Tom Petty and Heartbreaker music in my car, in my house, in the office, because it was captivating. As you well know, that first album was great. And... So
Charlie Kendall at K West, was he the first to play it?
Oh yeah. Well, so took it to Charlie's house. I'm sorry. I took it to Charlie's house and see what he thought. He said, I've never heard of him. And, he put the record on headphones and at the end of it, he said, this is one of the best effing records I've heard in my life. So I know right away somebody finally sees my vision of what are they any good live, he asked. I said, Charlie, I just picked up this record by accident.
You hadn't seen them live, right?
I have no idea if they're good live. But we find out they're opening for Blondie following Saturday night. Tom's the opening band. And so me and Charlie look at each other. We said, we're going. See this band.
Right.
And we did. We went to the Whiskey, maybe 20, 30
right?
people
right?
in the audience.
And it only holds a couple of hundred. We had a Dave Matthews thing there, too, years later. But so you see, you go to see Tom Petty for the first time at the Whiskey mm-hmm. in Los Angeles. The show blows you away. You go backstage because you're excited. This is an artist. You're going to work. You're going to go against the label, and you're gonna break them. And you go back mm-hmm. there all excited, and their response to you was, fuck you, right, basically? Yeah.
Well, I walked in and said, hey, Tom, I'm Sean Scott, the new head of album promotion for ABC Records. And he said, I don't give a shit who you are. And he yells at Stan Lynch to... Stan, tell him what we think ABC Records, the record had been about 8 months.
Right,
really,
and so it was dead.
The government wasn't helping. But
right.
Stan, what do you think ABC Records stands for? And he goes, a bunch of cocksuckers, ABC. I hope it's okay to say.
Absolutely. We're online. I said, fuck you, so you can say
anything.
Anyway, so
then I asked Tom if he'd heard his radio on the record in Los Angeles, and he said no. I said, well, you're going to hear it Monday morning, and this, my buddy here, Charlie, is going to be playing it once an hour, every hour,
wow.
breakdown.
Wow.
He went, bullshit. You guys are two nut jobs from ABC Records. And so just get the hell out of here. And so I had heard the record, right? And then I just saw it right in front of me, a 30-minute set. That's all you need to see. And so I knew it at that time. So... So he has escorted out the place, but as I'm leaving, I go, Tom, Every time you hear your record on the radio, you're going to think of me. My name is John Scott, and don't ever forget my name.
Ooh.
And it was another barrage of F-bombs or whatever. And but I understood why, because they had been promoted wrong. In
sure,
magazine.
They weren't promoted, right? Mm-hmm. The label put out the record and let it die, which happens all the time, doesn't it? I mean, this is not unusual.
Well,
No,
it really doesn't happen
really?
All the time. Think no. about it. I mean, how many records can you say were 8 months old and were...
Not getting any traction? No, they don't resurrect them. What I'm saying is they let them die. If they don't get immediate traction, they're on to the next thing. So Tom Petty could have been on the rock and roll grave pile. We never would have heard him if not for your efforts. Uh-huh. So John Scott is with us. Again, we're talking about the book he wrote, Tom Petty and Me. Originally, you were going to write a book about being a promo guy in the heyday of rock and roll radio. And after Tom Petty died... You decided to turn the focus on Petty and explain how you broke him. So Charlie Kendall at K West played the song every hour as he promised. Petty heard it, I guess started believing you, and all of a sudden you started getting airplay around the country. And then you had this is the sign of a good promo guy is you come up with something to help the radio station. So there were some stations who said, well, we actually played it a little bit when it first came out, but it didn't do anything, so we dropped it. We can't add it again 8 months later. So you had Tom Petty do a special radio show where they recorded a live version of Breakdown, and you were able to get new traction on some of these stations with that?
Yes, absolutely. It actually was an entire concert, but Tom knew that I needed a kick-ass version of that song to give the radio stations who had been supporting it. And he killed it. He nailed it. Mike Campbell just was beautiful. And it was in front of 30 people at Capitol Records that were contest winners. There was no stage. It was pretty trippy. But you listen to the live version of Breakdown. It's on the American Treasure CD box.
Wow. Okay.
It's just so good. But anyway, so we did Power at the Capitol Records. It was great.
That's awesome. And the rest, as they say, is history. Then,
A lot of ups and downs in between, but it's all in the book. And these stories really have never been told before, and there's pictures in there that have never been seen before.
I got to tell you, you sent me the book, and thank you. You autographed it for me. On the cover, you have it's the cover of Tom Petty's first album that's autographed to you, and it says to. It's hard to read Tom's writing. To something Memphis Natural John Scott. Here's the first one.
Sizzling
Memphis, because you were on the radio, Memphis. John Scott, here's the first one of the first one for the first one, Dare to be Great, TP. That's very cool. So you sent it to me. I was in the middle of stuff. I didn't have a chance to read it. And then about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe, I picked it up on a Saturday afternoon. And I couldn't put it down. I read it in one sitting. It brought back, first of all, for me, memories and so many people that I dealt with years later. You and I weren't in L.A. at the same time. I didn't get to L.A. until 87. I think you were already gone by then, weren't you? Or you were? You were doing the bowling.
No, I was still there. I went to work for Capricorn Records. And we found a kid named Billy Thorpe, who was a genius in Australia. And then they went out of business, and I went to work for Backstreet Records.
Okay.
That was 89.
Okay.
Which is, Tom was going back and forth at MCA with a lawsuit about being bought and sold, so he went bankrupt.
Oh, no.
It was the only thing he could do at the time, because they wanted he'd signed a terrible contract with Shelter. And so MCA, that's what they wanted. So he didn't like being sold like meat, so... he decided to file bankrupt and had a trial.
Wow.
But anyway, Danny Bramson at Backstreet Records, he worked at MCA Records, and Cameron Crowe, the great Cameron Crowe.
Sure, Cameron Crowe, right.
We're friends, and Cameron basically said, you should sign this guy, Tom Petty.
Huh.
And he was kind of right in the middle of it, but he knew the first time he saw it. Anyway... So Tom requested that I be the head of album promotion, VP of that album promotion.
Yeah, baby.
For Backstreet. That was part of the deal, which is great, because Capricorn had just folded. And so all of a sudden I'm working again with Tom.
Right.
And a brand new label, a brand new record, a record that was his breakthrough record.
Right. So that's exciting. Those days were the days of excess. Again, I moved out to L.A. in 87. I worked at KNX FM. I worked at KLSX before I went to KLOS. But there were, because we were L.A., that's where everything was. There were the radio and records magazine conventions. There were the infamous bowling parties, which I think is where I met you. The T.J. Martell bowling parties. Those were the good old days with decadence like you wouldn't believe at the radio and records conventions in Century City, the hotels. I think finally kicked us out. It was rock and roll decadence. It's the kind of stuff you read about and that you write about a lot in the book, Tom Petty and Me. You mentioned, I just to share some of the color, Charlie Minor, who was your boss at ABC Records, who made you take the pledge not to get passionate about an artist that he might not hear. Charlie Minor was infamous. He used to hold court Tuesday nights at Le Dome on Sunset Boulevard.
Right.
Went to a few
of
those nights because Tuesdays were the days that radio stations would report the ads to the trade magazines. And then so I guess Tuesday nights he'd have a big blowout and hold court at Le Dome. Charlie Minor was eventually murdered by a woman. These are the stories that you've heard about, that you lived, and they're in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I didn't really get into that a lot.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, yeah, he was the king of record promotion.
Yes.
At the time. You know,
he was.
He had so many great relationships with people. And you couldn't stop Charlie from talking.
Right. I got to tell you, some of my favorite stories in here, you go into great detail about the days of the traveling Wilburys and how fax machines had just been introduced. And Tom Petty was so intrigued by the fax machine that he bought one and started faxing in his Wilbury character radio stations, who all just were ecstatic that, oh, my God, Tom Petty was faxing them.
Yeah, we came up with the idea because we had faxed each other back and forth for maybe 2 or 3 months, and he would for example, he would send a fax going, "Hey, John," and we didn't know anybody else to fax. "Hey, John, can you send me something so I can show Roger McGuinn how this fax machine works?"
Oh, my God.
So I returned something back, and then I get a fax back from Tom's phone fax, and it says, "Hey, thanks, Roger McGuinn," and... You know, so we just started playing with each other back and forth, just doing crazy little things.
And you have a lot of the faxes, pictures in the book, which are just, they're awesome.
Thank you. And the actual faxes in the book, people love them.
Yeah.
Hello,
John. Anybody home? Here's the one. "Hello, John. Anybody home? Could you send me anything so I can demonstrate my fax to Roger McGuinn? Thanks, TP."
You turn it over.
Awesome. Yep. Yeah, it's great stuff. And then you got one. "Hi, John. Thanks for the fax demo. All the best, Roger McGuinn." These are treasures. It must be very, rewarding, but bittersweet. I mean, I have those days, too. I think about, being in adventurous radio, the format that I worked in was known as AAA, and we broke new artists. You mentioned seeing Tom Petty at the Whiskey. I mentioned I did the first Los Angeles radio interview with Dave Matthews back in 94. And during the interview, I say, "You've got two shows coming up this weekend at the Whiskey. Friday night sold out, but there are still some tickets available for Saturday." For Dave Matthews at the Whiskey, which holds like 200 people. So I know the excitement, the thrill of being passionate about music and being the first one to expose them to the masses and then seeing them break. It's awesome. And now all these years later, here I am sitting in Florida talking politics and fighting with Ben Montench on Twitter, seriously. That happened yesterday. I miss those days. I don't know what you're doing now. You left LA, you went to program a radio station in Hawaii for many years, right?
Yeah,
a community radio
station.
I did.
I went to in 1992, I decided to leave Los Angeles and get a house in Kauai.
Oh.
And 6 months after the house was built, Hurricane Aniki came through.
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, 200-mile-an-hour wind took my roof. And anyway, and they there was no communication between one side of the island and the other, so we started a community radio station. To, you know, so the North Shore could be, I mean, there was nobody talking to anybody. But, yeah, we started KKCR, Kauai Community Radio.
Right, and when your house was being repaired for months, where did you and your family stay?
Tom's house.
Yeah, Tom Petty.
It was like you're not staying in a house that's got mud and mold on an army cot. You're coming to my house.
All rock stars aren't as wonderful as Tom Petty was, are they?
I'm sorry.
I said all rock stars aren't as magnanimous and wonderful as Tom Petty was.
No. In the hurricane, he sent me a generator. Nobody had one on the island. It's such a small island. Nobody had generators.
Wow.
Except me. He never forgot. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, he never forgot.
Cool. So why did you leave Hawaii? What made you go back to L.A.?
My granddaughter.
Ah,
was being born.
The perfect reason. So you wrote the book. I'm guessing you're semi-retired these days.
Well, yes, I have an internet radio station that I run called AllMemphisMusic.com.
Oh, okay.
And we just play, we're hired by the Memphis Convention and Visitors Bureau, and we play just nothing but Memphis music.
Oh, nice.
Just fantastic to hear the thing.
Okay, what's the URL again?
All Memphis Music.
Ah.
And you get to play Otis, and you get to play Aretha, and we get to play Booker T and the MGs, Carla Thomas. We just have a blast. Elvis.
Nice. I will have to check that out. AllMemphisMusic.com.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. The problem with music on the internet is the licensing issues. They still haven't figured that out. The record labels were way behind when it came to dealing with the internet. They really screwed up, in my view. And they still don't seem to have it together. And it's hard. I mean, I'd love to do an internet radio station, but the licensing fees would kill me.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. And it's not right. Nobody really understands it. You know, it's like we're there to still try to help people, especially new artists, and you can't afford to do that.
Right. Well, it's somebody, a name from the past you might know, who's visiting in our YouTube chat room is Michelle Clark. And I don't know.
Oh, hey, Michelle.
Hey, Michelle. And Michelle was my indie record promoter at two of the AAA stations in Los Angeles, and we worked together on a number of things, and she produced this series. I don't know if you ever knew about Sunset Sessions, but she put together a program to get adventurous radio programmers and new artists and label people and music supervisors from film and TV and bring them to an exotic location to hear the music, see the artists, bond with them and everything. She did this for 20 years. And in fact,
she's a trooper.
And so we're talking about trying to resurrect it in some way. So I said something earlier about dipping my foot back into the music world for our mental health. For my mental health, I certainly need to do that. But it's so important. As I was saying, I had a meltdown yesterday. Music is an important part of our lives. It gives us a diversion from the insanity in the world. And I mentioned I loaded up my iPod with my whole record library, and I've been enjoying music again for the first time in a long time, and it's a great way to take the edge off. It's memories. It puts you back in another place and time. And I'm sure you know that better than anyone else, John Scott.
Well, Tom Petty and Heartbreakers are probably, in my opinion, the most iconic rock and roll band in America. There'll never be a Tom Petty. And it's being passed on from generation to generation. Endorsed my books, and one kid said, send this to my mom and dad, who turned me on to Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers when I was 13 years old. And now I'm a huge fan.
Wow.
And so it's a kind of generational thing. It's just going down, and it'll never stop.
It'll never stop. Well, I was fortunate enough.
Songs are timeless.
I got to interview Tom Petty once at Channel 103.1 in Los Angeles. I got a picture up on YouTube right now. My dog Sandy is there. And I will podcast that. I'll add it to my music.
Please.
My music interviews page. at NicoleSandler.com this weekend. We don't have time to do it now. But, yeah, he was one of a kind. And just when, and people will hear the interview I did with him. Genuine, kind, wonderful man. And
He was.
And you were there.
Absolutely.
John Scott, thank you for writing a wonderful book and for sharing your memories. I think people will enjoy this when they read it. It's called Tom Petty and Me. John Scott, thank you so much, John. It was great talking to you.
Thanks, Nicole.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
And I hope everyone reads the book. I mean, it really is great. I'll put up a link on my blog at NicoleSandler.com where I podcast the show if you want to buy it on Amazon. Pretty great stuff. All right. And that does it for the week. Thank you. We'll get through this together. We will. I promise. One way or another, we'll get through this together. Have a great weekend, everyone. Keep the faith, baby.